Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Night House, The Protégé, Paw Patrol the Movie, Demonic, and Nine Perfect Strangers. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Jacob's Wife on Shudder. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Now, the big movie news that had happened over the weekend was the box office success of Free Guy. And look, I do not want to take anything away from everybody who was involved in this. I think this was a win for everybody. It was a win for Ryan Reynolds. It was a win for Disney. It was a win for Fox. It was a win for movie theaters. It was a win for audiences. There's a lot of good stuff that came out of this. And what this does show is there is still life in movie theaters. But I also think it's a little disingenuous for people in the box office pundancy to herald Free Guy as an unmitigated success with, and get this, $28.4 million. But at the same time, a couple weeks ago, they lambasted the Suicide Squad as an utter failure with $26.2 million difference between the box office take-home of these two films. And yeah, Suicide Squad had a slightly higher budget, but Free Guy was also well over $100 million to make. This was not a cheap movie. This was not some rogue indie film that cost $2 million to make and then got a big release. It was like, what, $120 million for the box office? And it was one that was famously caught not just in the changeover from Fox to Disney during the acquisition, but to get caught up in the coronavirus pandemic because it was supposed to come out last year. And a lot of people will point out and say, oh, well, but it's an original intellectual property. And audiences have trouble with that. BS. I am calling BS on that right now. As much as people like to report that sequels, reboots, and remakes are the only thing that works in Hollywood, that's a lie. First of all, Hollywood is littered with hundreds of remakes, reboots, and sequels that didn't work. You just don't hear about those, and those tend not to be listed on the top of box office reports. Original intellectual property or original IPs are tougher to market because you don't have anything to hang on to. You can't say, oh, remember that thing that we did 2 years ago? Here's another one that's just like it. Hopefully it'll be the same. You have to find a new way to market it. And when it came to Free Guy, the stars really did align. I mean, it was a big name behind it, which is Ryan Reynolds. It was a very easily understood premise. It was a PG-13 movie. It was sort of that last-ditch chance to go to the movie theaters before school starts. It got fantastic reviews, and it's also a pretty fun movie. Now, if you compare that to Suicide Squad, which had very few major stars. Yeah, Idris Elba is a major star, but I don't know if he's a headlining, guaranteed-to-make-money movie star. Margot Robbie's in it, but she was kind of a supporting character in that film. It was R-rated, famously, and its premise was not differentiating itself much from the first film. Plus, then you got the hybrid release, more on that, which suppresses the box office, but not necessarily profitability. From a statistical standpoint, they made the same amount of money. But people are heralding Free Guy as this unmitigated success. The reason for a lot of that is I think box office pundits are still upset that they cannot get the numbers from the day and date releases like what you got from Disney Plus or HBO Max, and they're lashing out. And that's where you really do see a bias coming into box office reporting. And even some of them, like where Disney, you can get an actual number of how much it made doing the Disney Plus Premier Access release. You don't know from HBO Max, except for the fact that you know that HBO Max is billing in excess of $500 million a month. Because here's the other thing with Free Guy. It's not exactly selling out theaters. It's bringing people out, sure. But this is not like when the Avengers made $200 million its opening weekend. And this might be very short-lived because if numbers dip due to Delta, you might see some backpedaling to not lose some of these home viewers. Disney might retool the Premier Access, which I think it's going to do anyways. And Warner Brothers might look ahead to say, can we do some sort of a pay-per-view options and have some sort of scaling release? And this sort of swerves into stuff that's a little in the weeds, but there was a big discussion on film Twitter this week about the theatrical experience and whether people still want that. As much as everybody talks about, oh, the theatrical experience is great, it's the perfect way, there's a lot of people who don't particularly like it. You got to deal with cell phones and talkers and high prices and the annoyance of crowds. And you got to deal with projection problems and sound issues and where you sit and sticky floors. The bottom line is, and I talked about this in the heat of the pandemic, is movie theaters are not essential. They're not like grocery stores. You don't have to go to the movies. I know people who haven't been to the movies in years, and they live very normal lives, and they see everything that I see. We've been conditioned for 18 months to watch stuff at home. Now we've got Delta variant and COVID cases surges, and people talking about mask mandates and vaccine passports, and then you're still going to have people going back and watching stuff at home. People watch original stuff all the time. They just may not go out and spend $20 a pop to go see it on a weekend. But all you have to do is look at the top 10 on Netflix. Look at the trending films and videos on Netflix. And you will see people are watching brand new stuff that has no basis in any sort of remake or reboot. They're watching that stuff all the time. That makes up a good chunk of the top 10 and trending stuff in Netflix. Original IPs work, it's just they may not work in the multiplex market anymore. And the multiplex market may not even work itself. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is coming out in September on the 22nd. And this is a new series on Disney Plus called Star Wars Visions.
Long ago, a great warrior came to this village and entrusted our ancestors with this. Its power and responsibility now lie with you.
You've been guided by the Force since you were born.
At last, the moment arrives.
It's the first time I've confronted such darkness. Something ancient and sinister.
What they've done with this one is they've taken several anime directors and allowed them to do their own Star Wars stories, which I think is fantastic. And this is really where you're seeing the power of Disney Plus in building a film franchise. This is very similar to something like the What If section of Marvel, where it's giving you an idea to play around in that universe and where you're getting animated elements of a Star Wars film, but it's done in the grown-up, intense and really powerful and unique, or at least unique if you're not used to watching them, style of anime. So this looks like it's going to be really cool. The next one I want to hit is a big one that I'm looking forward to, and it's coming out on Apple TV Plus on September 24th, and that is Foundation.
You're familiar with my work, psychohistory?
Every mathematician has read your theory.
It's not a theory. It's the future of mankind expressed in numbers. And the Empire won't like the future I predict.
History is littered with charlatans and false messiahs.
We should kill them.
We can murder the men, but what about the movement, brother?
Martyrs tend to have a long half-life.
My father passed away a little bit more than a year ago. And the one thing I never told him about was the fact that Apple TV Plus was adapting Isaac Asimov's book series Foundation. And the reason I never told him is because I knew he wouldn't live long enough to see it. He loved Isaac Asimov, and they'd never done an adaptation of this, and he always wanted to see it. So there's a bittersweetness to this for me, because I'm really excited to see it. The Foundation series, even though it's kind of clunky and cheesy because it's from the 50s, it has some great elements to it, and I've read it a couple times, so I'm looking forward very much to seeing what they do, but it's also a little bit of a bittersweet thing because I can't enjoy it with my father. But, you know, his legacy lives on through me, and I'm looking very much forward to seeing this. This looks fantastic, and it's coming out in about a month. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Protégé and Demonic.
We'll be right back.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about The Protégé. Maggie Q stars as an assassin who goes out for revenge against the people who killed her surrogate father.
We sent away so many prematurely, either by my hand or through you.
We never sent anyone away who didn't have it coming.
She's not gonna run. She's gonna lick her wounds. And she's coming after us.
And sniffed me out like I was tankering.
Someone killed a friend of mine because of a contract he completed years ago.
Oh, yeah?
You get the answers, I'll be the last thing you ever say.
First of all, it has a great cast. The two or three people that are headlining, at least. I mean, Maggie Q is great. She's beautiful, and she has the physicality, and I mean, she's in her 40s, and she can still kick a whole heck of a lot of butt. And so I think it was great that they're wrapping a movie around her. And this one falls into, again, that category of this assassin who is unstoppable and brilliant at what she does. So this is clearly trying to be another female John Wick, even though, like I said, I don't think they're ever going to top how Gunpowder Milkshake worked for that one. But it also has some other good co-stars. You've got Samuel L. Jackson in it. And although he's getting a bit long in the tooth, and it's nice that they point out in the movie he's turning 70, which I appreciated because at least we acknowledge how old Samuel L. Jackson is in real life. But he still, you know, plays a Samuel L. Jackson kind of character, and he's unstoppable as well. It also has Michael Keaton in it as a bad guy, question mark, because he's not the main bad guy, but he's sort of this gray character who switches whether or not he's a good guy or a bad guy, or he's helping her, or they're attracted to each other. So, which is a little bit creepy because he's what, like 30 some years older than she is, or 20 at least. Maggie Q is, she likes it. She's in her early 40s, and Keaton's got to be in the 60s by now. But the cast is better than the film is. I mean, the movie itself isn't terrible. But intellectual properties, this is original intellectual property. But the thing is, there's nothing about this that screams either A, I need to see this on the big screen, or B, I need to see this right now. This is the kind of movie that I think if you were sitting at home and you ran across it on streaming, you watch it and have a plenty good time. The plot's a little convoluted. There's like too many unnecessary twists and turns. It keeps kind of being like, oh, we're going to shift and move. And you're like, you don't need to shift and move. Just tell a story. Sometimes, you know, a lot of good, you know, twists and turns in a plot are cool. But sometimes you're just watching the plot stumble around like a drunk person at a party. And that's kind of what I feel this movie does to a degree. I mean, I still enjoyed it. I like the action sequences. And again, I think Maggie Q headlines it great. I'd love to see her get more stuff. And it's a shame that this is going to continue to fly and perform under the radar because she deserves her own franchise. I mean, it's an enjoyable film to watch, but there's nothing about it that says I have to see this right now. You know, nobody's going to be talking about this movie in a week. It's a run-of-the-mill, smaller action film. What's funny, it's directed by Martin Campbell, who's actually got quite a resume. He directed GoldenEye, he directed Casino Royale, yeah, he directed Green Lantern. But he's a big-name director. He's directed some really big stuff, but he's also directed a lot of VOD at-home-watching action movies. So he did that one with Jackie Chan a couple years ago, where he was the aging, I think he was like either an assassin or a Chinese agent, and he was tracking somebody down. But I mean, this is very much in Martin Campbell's wheelhouse. But it's also not anything that leaps out as something terribly unique. So it's an enjoyable movie to watch as a distraction, but I wouldn't put anything more on it. So I'm gonna say that it kind of rocks just because it's fun to watch, but it's nothing groundbreaking.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Demonic. A woman visits her comatose mother in prison and is convinced to enter her mind to discover what is haunting her.
Dropping you in 3, 2, 1.
I swear it was real.
Don't be scared.
Oh, sweetheart.
Do you know what this place is?
This one is directed by Neil Blomkamp, and you may not recognize the name, or you might have heard the name. I mean, I know it because I'm a film geek, but most people would recognize what he's done rather than who he is as a director. The biggest thing he directed was District 9, and that was a smaller film that came out of South Africa. And it became a huge hit, was actually nominated for an Oscar. And District 9 is a brilliant movie. Part of the reason what made District 9 work is Blomkamp was basing it on a lot of allegories to South Africa, because that's where it took place. And some of this got lost in the translation to America, but it worked in building this compelling film. And it's a great movie. And then he did a couple follow-ups. He did Elysium with Matt Damon, and he did Chappie with Hugh Jackman to marginal success. Elysium did okay, but I think it didn't make its budget back, and it really wasn't a great movie. And Chappie was a mess. It was kind of all over the place. And Neil Blomkamp was actually tapped to do some work on the Alien franchise, and that never came through. And so here's him kind of going back to the well. He's going back to a smaller, more intimate, lower budget film. I think this is kind of self-financed. It doesn't have any big stars. The biggest name in it is Carly Pope. She's been in stuff like 24 and Popular, but she's hardly the name that you anchor a movie around to release it. But I actually love when a director does this, when you have a big director that goes back to a more intimate story and allows them to tell something that's interesting, because they're a good storyteller. And you're just kind of putting them into a smaller environment so they can do it a little bit differently. Just throwing $200 million at a director can sometimes get them so distracted and make it such a big movie that they can't actually make something coherent and interesting. Comparing this to Chappie and Elysium, it's his best movie he's done in years. It doesn't hold a candle to District 9, but it's an interesting movie because it deals with things that are sort of like, I like, you know, sort of like going to a lab and they're doing some sort of science-y research and they're projecting her mind into her mother's mind. But then they have these connections to religion and theology and demonology and what is actually causing the problem here. And I found that stuff to be really interesting. In a weird way, that part was a little bit bigger than the budget, where I think they struggled to make that work. But the other thing is, I love it when a filmmaker is able to take a what would be considered a deficit and make it work in the movie. So when she goes into the mind of her mother, she's assisted by computers. These artificial environments she goes into, they look very low res. They look like animatics, pixelated, and it doesn't fit together. But it works in the story because the computers are trying to process what's coming out of the human brain. And so, of course, it's coming in choppy and not complete. And that makes it look even more real. And I thought that was a great way of taking what would have been a deficit, a low budget that they can't afford massive CGI, and doing something at a lower resolution and a lower quality, but that actually helps build the story. So I love that element to it. The actual script itself is a little bit clunky. He was a little overly ambitious for this story, but I still found it an enjoyable film to watch. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Night House and 9 Perfect Strangers. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Night House. Rebecca Hall stars as a woman whose husband killed himself, and then she finds herself being stalked by a spirit in their home.
Do you guys believe in ghosts?
I think there's something in my house.
Did he leave a note?
He did.
You were right. There is nothing. Nothing is after you. You're safe now.
You said you were safe? Safe from what?
I didn't think we had secrets.
Everybody has secrets.
I think it was either last week or the week before I was talking about there's a sort of new genre of version of Cabin in the Woods movies. I used to call them Airbnb movies. But this one's not an Airbnb movie because she owns the house. But, you know, Cabin in the Woods movies used to be like Evil Dead, where there was this rustic, grimy cabin and then something horrible happens to the people staying there. A new version of that has shown up where it's a nice house. Houses with glass ceilings and sliding doors and beautiful construction that are out there in the middle of nowhere, and they become the source of a horror story. And we've seen that a lot. You know, there was that movie, They Should Have Left, with the one with Kevin Bacon last summer. Other ones, like Save Yourselves, which was the one about this alien invasion and these people staying in this cabin. But The Night House follows that pattern because the house where she lives, her and her husband had, is essentially in the woods. It's by a lake. And it's secluded from her neighbors. You know, you can't see any other houses. And it's dark and it's creepy, but it's a really nice house. It's not a creepy old haunted house. You know, the old-fashioned haunted house with the creaky stairs and everything. But this fits in that type of a movie. The other thing this does is, I'd say at least 60% of the scenes in this movie is just Rebecca Hall. And let's talk about Rebecca Hall right now. I'm not always a huge fan of the movie she's in, but I have to say, she is a fantastic actor, and she will tackle a movie, whether it's a big awards piece or if it's just a little horror movie, she will give it her all. And she is what makes this movie work. Without Rebecca Hall, this would have been a fizzle, but she makes it come alive. And she is the reason you want to see this movie. She's fantastic in it. She throws down with the acting because it's a lot of times just her reacting to nothing, sometimes just reacting to special effects. So she does a great job keeping it all together, and she brings this level of pain and anguish and guilt and suffering to the character, which can easily be overdone and easily be overstated in a film, but she balances it really well. I mean, because of course, it's about her husband who killed himself that she didn't know was going to happen. She was not even aware that he was contemplating. He got a gun that she didn't even know he had and kills himself. That's part of the whole story. And so she's not just dealing with the grief of losing a husband. She's dealing with the guilt of not even seeing that stuff happen. And then the story that gets unraveled and sort of the mystery to it. This is one of those movies that it lays out a little bit of mystery here and there, and the twists and turns in this one propel the story, unlike something like The Protégé, where they just kind of make the movie spin its wheels. This is an expertly done, creepy, unnerving film about haunted houses. And the other thing that makes it interesting is her character comes at it because she's basically an atheist. She believes in, when you die, just nothing. There's no afterlife. There's no spirits or anything. And this paranormal stuff happening is really challenging her beliefs. But it's not obnoxious about it. She's not like this annoying, obnoxious atheist. This is just her beliefs. And she's confronted with something horrifying and terrifying, but possibly also benevolent. She doesn't know. And it's preying upon her while she's in a very vulnerable state. And like I said, that's why if you had a different actor in this, you would have a very different movie. But it's a creepy, effective, really well done movie. I would say probably the best thing that's out there right now from the weekend's releases. So I'm going to have to say The Night House totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about 9 Perfect Strangers. I know this one's not a movie. It's a series. I like to cover the series. Part of it is because, you know, I don't know what's going to be happening with the releases coming up. I mean, September, once you get past Shang-Chi, it's going to be kind of a wasteland for September until you get into October. We'll see what happens with September is going to be a really telling time about what this rest of the year is going to look like in movies. If theaters can sustain the low box office, you're just going to get because there's nothing huge opening past September 3rd. But let's talk about this one on Hulu. It dropped on Wednesday, I believe, and they did the first 3 episodes. This Hulu series features a slate of characters who come from diverse backgrounds to a therapy retreat run by a mysterious woman.
You here for the 10-day retreat, Us 2.0?
I certainly am.
Welcome. Tranquillum House. The people who come here, they come to heal.
I don't want to suffer.
You're already suffering.
Surrender yourself
to me. I am gonna fix you.
Sort of like The Protégé, but doubling down on it. This has one of the best casts you're ever going to see assembled. I mean, you've got Nicole Kidman playing Masha, the mysterious woman who's running this retreat. And you've got the people playing the patients. You've got Luke Evans and Bobby Cannavale and Michael Shannon and Melissa McCarthy and Regina Hall and Samara Weaving. I mean, it's a great cast, and everybody is given a lot to work with. And so each of the actors, there's a lot of meat for them to play around with. From an actor's perspective, this is a great series to have because everybody has a level of depth. The setup, I was kind of interested to see in it because it felt like, oh, there must be something going on. There must be something creepy happening. Because they play this out as, oh, this is this beautiful paradise of a place. But there's something unnerving in the background. You're like, is there something sinister happening? Is there something criminal happening? Is this Masha character really trying to help him? Or is she trying to take advantage of him? Is she doing bad things? And then everybody has a secret because, you know, that's the kind of thing. You know, everyone's come to this 10-day retreat and everybody has a secret that they're trying to deal with, and the grief in their past and their struggles and their problems and the reason they need therapy in the first place. And I'm just watching it going, wow, these characters are great. I'm not, okay, they're at this retreat and that's fine. But I keep waiting for something explosive or sinister or dark or some big reveal. And I never get that. And I'm watching this movie and I'm like, holy cow, I'm like in the fifth episode and nothing is happening. And it's just hysterical because when you get the links to these things, they have these big embargo warnings. Like, don't tell people any of the twists and turns, don't reveal anything. I'm like, I don't know what to reveal if I could. I mean, yeah, everybody has the reason they're there is a big secret. But even then, when you get that secret, you're just like, okay, I can understand that. You're troubled by this. Great. How did that propel the story into something not boring? It's beautiful looking and it's got great actors and they give their all. But holy cats, man, this is the most boring show. It is like I've gone to therapy on a Gwyneth Paltrow goop retreat. That is what I feel like watching this movie. I feel like I need therapy after suffering through what I had to suffer through. This just doesn't pay off, and it stretches it out. And even when it does give a payoff, it's the lamest payoffs you've ever seen. And it just, And it's bad enough to sit there and listen to people complain about their problems. Why do I want to watch an entire series about that? And then some crazy hippy-dippy person who runs the thing has these weird treatments. How does that help anybody, aside from these characters that I don't care about in the first place? The only thing that holds this show together is the chemistry between some of the characters and the actors in particular, but that's just that they're so good. And with that good of a cast, you should be able to put together something better. I was not a fan, as if you can't tell. So I'm going to have to say that Nine Perfect Strangers sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Rob Zombie's Paw Patrol, the movie, and the home cinema roundup featuring Jacob's wife. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's wrap up the movie reviews with what actually might be the biggest new one of the weekend. Free Guy might win again. It just depends on how much it drops. Because there's a lot of movies going into the marketplace. But honestly, I think this one's tracking the best, so we'll see. And this one's getting a hybrid release, too, because it's coming out in theaters and on Paramount Plus. And that is Paw Patrol, the movie, or as I like to refer to it as Rob Zombie's Paw Patrol. It's not a Rob Zombie movie. I don't want to be accused of confusing the audience. It's, of course, based on the TV series Paw Patrol. I've never seen the TV series. Part of it is when you become a parent, you get a crash course in TV programs for kids. You become very familiar with Nick Jr. Now, when my kids were coming up through the young age, preschool age, it was Dora the Explorer and Diego and Blue's Clues. and the Little Einsteins, which was on Disney Channel, and they had the Wonder Pets. And there were a whole bunch of these things. And we'd seen every single episode because your kids watch it with you. Or rather, you're watching it with the kids. Well, my kids are, I mean, my oldest is 20. My youngest is 13. So nobody's watching this stuff now. And I have no concept of what's going on. Like, I got friends who've got kids that are preschool age, and they know all about Paw Patrol and PJ Masks. And so I didn't know anything about Paw Patrol. So once a week, I watch my cousins, and I've talked about them before on this show, Cody the Destroyer and Mika the Merciless. And Cody's 7, Mika's 5. And so I said, well, like, let's go to the horse's mouth and talk to them. So I didn't know much about Paw Patrol. So I interviewed them, and here's them explaining what the show's about to me. We got Cody the Destroyer here. He's going to explain what Paw Patrol is, because I've never seen it before. What's Paw Patrol?
It's like 5 pups driving cars trying to save the whole city.
Wait, dogs are driving cars?
Yes.
Is that not dangerous?
I don't know.
Or does somebody own the dogs? There's a boy involved in this whole thing. What's his job?
To just tell the pups what to rescue.
Are there other dogs in the city that they rescue, or do they rescue humans?
Humans.
Well, where are all the firemen and police women in that?
There is none.
This sounds like a terrible idea. Now we're going to ask Mika the Merciless here. Come here, Mika. Now, you explain to me what Paw Patrol is.
What Cody said.
What Cody said? Okay. So, is there a reason why they rely on dogs to save everybody?
I have no clue.
You have no clue. Okay. Well, thank you for straightening that out for me. Okay, so now I think I'm up to speed. I have as many questions as I had before, and it's even more confusing. But let's talk about the film. In Paw Patrol, the movie, the hero pups from Adventure Bay travel to the big city to stop a corrupt mayor from outlawing dogs in the city limits.
When all hope seems lost.
Let's get out of here!
When heroes
Help!
Are needed more than ever. Our fate is in their paws.
A dog?
Actually, sir, I'm a puppy.
That's even worse.
You're in shock, so I'm not going to take that personally. Whoa! Welcome to our new headquarters.
This is a cute movie. I mean, when you're faced with a movie like this, and you don't have kids that are of the age that would watch this, you kind of just watch it and go, hey, that was cute. I mean, what am I going to do? Am I going to dissect this and be like, I didn't think the performances were believable enough? Look, I've heard from other people that kids are going nuts over this movie, and I can see why. It's cute dogs. Forget the fact we don't understand who owns who and who licenses who and who cleans up all the poop in this movie. That's something that's taken care of behind the scenes. The story's cute. It's dogs saving the day. And the thing with this one is it does make it bigger than the TV show, because instead of being in this little seaside town, they go to the big city and they have a Paw Patrol station set up there. Why? I don't know. But it is. These are existential questions I can't discuss right now. But it's cute. And it's the kind of thing that I think, you can tell that they spent more money on the animation. Sort of like that movie Spirit Untamed, which was that horse movie that came out earlier this year, and it's based on a TV series on Netflix. The TV series is a little more rudimentary design and animation, and they stepped up the game for the Spirit movie, and that's kind of the same thing here. Instead of it being that run-of-the-mill chop-shop animation that you get on a lot of these series, they made it bigger, because you're not the big city, and they got some new characters, got a new dog that suffers from anxiety, which I think is sort of reaching out to all the parents out there. That's like, I know how tough it is to raise a kid, so this one's here for you. So it's really meaning to be inclusive and fun, and it's sweet, and it manages to have a bad guy who kind of looks like the Monopoly Man that they can fight against, but it's not like no one's really getting hurt. So it's a cute movie. It's worth seeing. If you got kids, see it. Or if you got Paramount Plus, it's available on Paramount Plus. And that's something that they can just watch over and over and over again. I mean, it's not as like out of the box and innovative as something like the Boss Baby movies, which I think are made with a little more tongue in cheek for the parents as well. This is seriously definitely made for kids, but I think it's watchable by adults. And that's what makes a good child's release. So I'm going to have to say Paw Patrol, the movie, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Jacob's Wife, which came out earlier this year in theaters and VOD, but now it's getting an exclusive run on Shudder, the streaming service that focuses on horror and thrillers. Scream Queen Barbara Crampton stars as a preacher's wife who is bitten by a vampire and tries to adjust to her new life.
I want to live a bigger life.
That's odd. You've got new teeth coming in.
What?
40 years I've known this woman. Every day the same. Now, I don't know who I'm coming home to.
How much of that could I get?
You want the blood?
I feel more alive than I have in years.
Hey, Mrs. Fetter, you all right?
It wasn't me.
Of course it was you.
Now, we've seen these sort of tongue-in-cheek. And when I say tongue-in-cheek for a movie like this, it may not be your own tongue. It might be somebody else's. These tongue-in-cheek stories of a monster movie where it mines humor from this sort of mundane situation. Like, you know, the Santa Clarita Diet. I never watched that, but that seemed to have the horror movie elements, because in that TV series, Drew Barrymore was a zombie, I believe. And they sort of mined humor to it. And this one, they mine the humor. It starts out very pragmatically like a horror movie, but as it moves on, it starts to get, and I'm not going to say silly, because I wouldn't say the movie silly, but they start injecting humor about halfway through, and they increase the level of humor, and it gets very dry, and at times very funny, but it's almost like the characters aren't in on the joke, so they still play it very seriously. And Barbara Crampton's great. I've loved her ever since she really came on the scene as a Scream Queen in the 80s. She was in that movie Chopping Mall. But I knew her from the Full Moon movies like Reanimator and From Beyond. And because she, I mean, she's gorgeous. She's a beautiful woman. And she would do nude scenes back then. So I was a big fan. And she's been working pretty consistently over the years. But she had a bit of a, you know, sort of popular comeback about 10 years ago when she was in You're Next. And since then, she's shown up in a couple things like Beyond the Gates and, you know, now Jacob's Wife. And she's been showing up in a lot of movies lately. She's sort of getting more street cred, especially in the horror community. She's done something. She did some soap operas and stuff, and she showed up in non-horror related stuff. But really, her legacy is in horror. And I mean, she's like 60 now, and she still looks fantastic. She still does a little bit more sexy scenes in this, which I say, hey, that's great. More power to her, and more power to making a movie like this that will allow you to see a woman of her age as attractive and sexy and dangerous and powerful. You know, there's a lot of talk about the uplifting nature, as even though horror movies can be scary and terrifying and punishing at times, there is this weird little uplifting nature for people who normally don't always get that. So I think it's great that she is seeing a renaissance in her career. And this movie is perfectly enjoyable. Even though the tone shifts, it's not like bouncing around in different spots. It goes from being pretty serious to being at times silly, but it never feels jarring. So the movie itself changes as you go through the film, and it becomes something different than what it started out as, but it feels very organic, and it's a lot of fun and enjoyable. So I'm going to have to say Jacob's Wife totally rocks. If you got Shudder, check it out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray, we've got The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, Labyrinth, The Borrower, and Rad. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Candyman, The Colony, and Vacation Friends. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.